This is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Bruins back in their own end. Played around the boards into the far corner. A long lead pass for Pastrnak. He drops it back for the defenseman, Lindholm. Lindholm with a diagonal shooting into the right wing corner. Cut right in front, they score! A diagonal shooting that caroms off the corner boards that Ilya Samsonov has got to play. And he didn't. And Pastrnak gets the puck and is able to sweep it into the zone and in behind the Leaf netminder for the winning goal.
It might be May 6th, but boy, it feels like Groundhog Day. Welcome, everyone, to Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Peter, that's Shan. On the ones and twos is Cam. Thank you guys so much for stopping by on this, my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. We are coming to you from the DL Basement Systems downtown studios for Doug Lacey's Basement Systems. We are your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. We are all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. All the snow we've had, all the rain we've had, basements getting tested. So DL, Doug Lacey's Basement Systems, definitely putting in some work, but they are definitely the best around. Shan, I don't know how you could be anything less than joyous after the clip we just heard, but how are you today, sir?
Joyous. Very joyous. Yeah, listening to that, you know what, you kind of start to feel bad for Leafs fans, and then go back and you're like, nah, I actually don't.
No, this is what makes the extreme amounts of coverage around the Leafs bearable, is that on this day every year, we get to do a little bit of grave dancing on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And it's
Leafs.
Right around the same time.
Exactly, yeah. After seven games of the first round, we get to do that, and maybe sometimes five games of the second round. We get to do a bit of a tap dance. We'll be a bit more professional when we talk with Luke Fox about it coming up at 1:30. 2 o'clock, we have Haley McGoldrick coming on to chat about a variety of things across the sporting world, including a big basketball game that happened a little bit north of us. So that will be coming up in hour number two. Your texts, always welcome at the fan feedback line, 960-960. I don't know if we still call it that, but it felt right to say. I was saying to Shan before we got going, I got in here actually early today and still frantically writing out my notes as the open was playing. So, A, kids, get ADHD checked. B, gonna need your help on the text line to roll us through today. But no help with this one, Shan, as we start off with the Toronto Maple Leafs. First of all, you need to drink more water according to your water bottle.
No, we do this every time. What time am I at?
Shan, it is 1 o'clock, and that thing is way too close to the 11 o'clock
here,
side.
So just give me a sec.
You chug, and I will rant about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah, keep going. I thought the buzz in the sound was you putting that up to the microphone, but you turned it off. All right, so the Toronto Maple Leafs are done in seven, and I know that Leaf coverage can be insufferable, but I do also think this is the biggest thing coming out of the weekend, and so I do think we need to talk about it. Off the start, credit to them for battling back to force a game seven. There, we got the knife stuff out of the way. This has to be it. This has to be the time for change for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You cannot put together a team that continues to bash their head into the wall every single time and hope for better results. 12 goals in seven games played for a team built on offense. And I don't want to hear, oh, well, we didn't have Nylander. Oh, well, we didn't have Matthews. One of the reasons you go out and you pick up four super-duper stars is so that when one of them goes down with a migraine or whatever Matthews has, you still have three! It's not so that, like, you can just have a fun nickname of the core four. It's not so that you can have, instead of two guys on season tickets, four guys on season tickets. It's so that you always have at least one or two of them going at one time, which is enough to sustain you for, I don't know, let's say, a seven-game playoff series. So I don't want to hear about how Matthews was out, how Nylander was out. You still had Marner, you still had Tavares, and you still had whichever one of the other two was in there. I am done with excuses with this team. I am done with whatever, so spare me. Also, quickly, this is one of the things that frustrates me so much. Text line, May 15th dances are a lot better than February 15th dances for Flames fans. Peter, be careful what you wish for. Look, just because the team we talk about happens to not be in the postseason doesn't mean that yours is awesome. The Calgary Flames should not now, nor for the next little while, be the benchmark that you hope to clear. But congratulations, you got over that insurmountable hurdle to be able to get into the playoffs and get embarrassed instead of it in the regular season. So, Shan, I say to you, is there any way the Leafs can just roll this thing back?
No, there is no way. And we've seen it so many times. It's year after year. It's the exact same thing. It's a really good regular season team. And even this year, we saw them dip a little bit in the regular season. And yes, Matthews had his 69 goals, which was, hey, nice job. But at the same time, you had other guys take dips. And Nylander maybe took a step, but then you signed him long term.
Yeah.
And now you've got next year. Mitch Marner and John Tavares have their contracts expiring. Problem is, they both have a no-move clause.
Right.
And you can say, hey, Mitch, we're trading you to the Edmonton Oilers for Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and 7 first-round picks, and he can say no. Mm-hmm. And he's from Toronto.
Right. So yeah, that's the thing. You got the two pajama wearers
exactly.
Who are the ones who are going to be moved. And
it's
Marner, Marner said a lot of things. Yeah. But Marner said, yeah, the goal is to stay in Toronto. Well, okay, I guess he's staying then, because he has full control over it. So that is an excellent point. Like, we can come on here and say, like, stick a dynamite this thing. Nylander isn't going anywhere. You just give him 8 years. Matthews, you can't, right? Like, there is no way you are winning that trade if you are moving an Austin Matthews. And I'm glad you said the thing about the regular season, because that is, in my mind, you think of the Leafs now as, like, look, the regular season thing they've got down, it's the playoffs they need to get figured out. And you go back and look at it, half of that is true. The Leafs won the North Division in the weird COVID year when we did that thing.
Yeah.
Aside from that, in an 82-game season, Leafs haven't won the division since 99-2000. Bob Cole was calling games in 99-2000, all right? They spent the last quarter of Bob Cole's life not winning divisions in 82-game seasons. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, like, this thing isn't even working in the regular season. And yeah, they got 111 points or whatever, but they haven't sniffed top spot in their division once. And so it's not like any of these years that the Leafs have somehow, some way, just bounced off of that brick wall again in the playoffs after a blowaway regular season. They finished second a couple of times in the division. So, you know, snaps for you. But it's not even, well, they had a dominant regular season and just ran into a whatever. It's you're playing game seven on the road for a reason. And there were some times where it's like, well, they got the regular season figured out. Regular season doesn't really mean anything. So let's see if they can. Well, the regular season probably needed to mean a little bit more at one of these times. So they could get one of these game sevens in their home building. And there were a couple of times they had home ice and it still didn't work. But even the regular season isn't as dominant as you would think it would be when you have those four dudes and others too, right? Like Morgan Rielly, I think, is quite good.
I agree.
And I think he is getting scapegoated super hard today for that goal, even though Marner had a bit of a your controller has been disconnected moment.
Yeah.
And they've had some other pieces around there and they haven't been able to fix it. But when you have those four guys, at least the regular season should be a relative breeze, but they still can't even win the division there.
Well, when we talk about the core four, and truthfully, I think their forward group is good. It's really good, actually. We look at their defensemen. Here's what they ran with in the playoffs. Morgan Rielly, Ilya Lyubushkin, Benoit, Jake McCabe, Joel Edmondson, and Timothy Liljegren. Does that scream anything playoff success to you?
No.
It doesn't.
No.
And that's, I think, exactly what they need to do this summer. And we talked about it. They both have the no move clauses.
Yeah.
And it's going to be ugly trying to figure it out. But the number one move they need to make is to get a young defenseman, and not just someone that has potential, a stud.
Yeah.
And yes, sure, goaltending might need some help. I mean, Joseph Woll has looked good, and from what I've seen, he just misses half the games, right?
Right.
So I still think that young defenseman is someone they need to target. We saw what Philly did getting Jamie Drysdale. Mm-hmm. I think that's a similar trade to make, but obviously, you know, they don't have the prospects. It's just this team, they can't run it back. It's not possible.
No.
The forward group is good. But the lack of playoff success and the amount of off-ice stuff that we see from the Leafs every year, especially around this time, and look at the Bruins. Bruins' only debate is, do we play Jeremy Swayman or Linus Allmark? Both
right.
of them amazing goalies. And the Leafs are like, oh, this guy's got a migraine and he's injured. And I think the coach is mad at this guy. Like, you can't do this when it comes to playoff time. It doesn't work.
No. Also, I think the coach is cooked, right?
Oh, like, he's gone.
And that I think this whole thing leads to bigger picture stuff. Like, you're not canning Treliving after 1 year. None of this is on Treliving.
No.
I don't think. Well, not all of this is on Treliving. I think they needed to come away from the deadline with more than Lyubushkin. I think they needed one of the Calgary guys, quite frankly. And I understand there's a thing there, but even Zadorov would have been an improvement over what they had. But
Tanev was perfect.
Yeah,
like, really,
Tanev was perfect. If they could have figured out the Tanev-Markstrom duo there, and I get cap space in Toronto is a bit iffy, but they had enough stuff, especially when Klingberg went on LTIR, they could have, I think, absolutely made that work. They just, Calgary would have made them pay a pretty penny.
Yep.
But you do that so you're not doing locker room cleanout day on May 6th. And so I think that it's not just one of Marner or Tavares, and probably Marner, because I don't know what Tavares is getting you at this point. But I think it's the coach, and I think it's Shanahan. I think the Shanahan plan is done. I think we have seen now that the Shanahan plan ain't going to work. And I worry about the next direction they would go, because they tried the Lou Lamoriello thing for a little bit and it got them close. And then they went away from that. And now I'm worried they're going to go back to, let's try to hard nose this thing up. And I don't know if that's necessarily the way to go. You need some hard nose, but I didn't watch the Rangers against Carolina yesterday and go, oh yeah, this is some hard nose hockey here.
Yeah.
Like, there's a way to mix the skill and the grind that is the playoffs. But the one thing about this group that continues to frustrate was it's the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same story year after year after year in the playoffs. It is the Stars don't produce enough offensively. You don't have enough depth/defense, as you mentioned. And then either Boston, Tampa Bay, Columbus, or Montreal drags you into a rock fight and you don't know how to handle that,
mm-hmm.
which is fine two or three times. Eight, you should probably figure it out. Like, Boston was doing relative rudimentary things. Matthews gets taken down behind the goal. Marchand gets tied up with Bertuzzi in the middle of the ice. And the Leafs just curl up in the fetal position and start crying as Frederick comes in and scores. That's the playoffs. That stuff, especially against Boston, that's the stuff they are always going to do. Boston doesn't even have to go to page two of their trick book to fool the Leafs. And so that is where it is just so apparent. Like, if this is a TV show, we're canceling it because there's no character development. Because these kids just are the same thing over and over and over and over again, how they just run into the same problem over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, and I will give the Leafs a bit of credit. I thought they had a little more snarl than previous years.
Right.
Having guys like Tyler Bertuzzi, Max Domi, and one guy that I will say is a dog is Matthew Nyes.
Yes.
That was a great pick. He has been, you know, he's a great power forward in this league. I think he's a rare player in this league. And what he brought to the Leafs, without Matthew Nyes, I really don't think we see the same success.
No.
And bringing in guys like that is important. The problem is you've given away so many draft picks in the last 3-4 years that it's really hard to hit on guys like that. And then I'll admit, Joel Edmondson, decent pickup. And you have Edmondson and Lyubushkin's big enough and tough. And Jake McCabe is also tough enough. But at the same time, that's where it goes back to the core four. And you talk about, you know, the mental toughness and what the Bruins are able to do. And you're right. It wasn't that difficult for them to get under the skin a little bit of some of these guys. And yeah, that play stood out to me. Absolutely. Marchand and Bertuzzi tied up at the line. And you can make your argument that Marchand could have had a penalty, but there also could have been a penalty each way. Whatever. I'm going off on that for no reason. But the Bruins do this, and they're a team that will fight for anybody on their team. It's a culture that I've talked about before. It goes all the way back to when Zdeno Chara was the captain.
Yep.
He set the precedent the day that training camp started. The fitness test, he beats everyone, and it shows that you want to be on this team, you got to work hard like Big Z, like Bergeron. And that still carries over. It's why Marchand's the captain. So it's two different cultures going at it. It really is, and I think that's what it comes down to. And, you know, we'll talk about it absolutely with Luke Fox, but with guys like Marner and even William Nylander, I think he's awesome, but after Game 7, he said, we went to overtime, you know, with some expletives. He said, we went to overtime, and in Game 7, what else do you want us to do? It's like,
win!
Exactly!
Yes!
We've been here before!
That's another thing. Tic-Tac-Tomar on X is a phenomenal follow. If nothing else, just melting down during Leafs games. he posts a thing. It's like all these guys saying, oh, well, you know what? We're close. You won 3 of 16. That's 13 games out of your the ultimate goal of winning a Stanley Cup. So, yeah, you were close in this first round. Would anyone give these guys a snowball's chance in hell of doing anything against Florida in the second round?
No.
Not a chance. I was even thinking about it today. I would have comfortably picked the Leafs over one team in the East playoffs, and that would be Washington.
Yeah.
Going up against Tampa Bay, if that would have been the series, some way, somehow, been like, Leafs in their playoffs and Vasilevsky, you never know. Mm-hmm. Islanders' play style would have given Toronto all sorts of fits. And then Carolina, the Rangers, Florida, and Boston did mop the floor with them, right? So I just, like, yes, you were close to winning a round. Congratulations. But you need to win four of those things to reach the ultimate goal. So, yeah, you were close in getting past step one. Step two, three, and four are a lot harder by design. And so, like, this team, it's just, it's cooked. And the last thing I'll say, I wanted it to work. I wanted this thing to work. I, in my brain, wanted to be able to say, like, yes, accumulating a lot of high-level talent is a good way to build a hockey team. And now we have seen in the salary cap world, at least with these four cats, it just ain't gonna work. Second rant of the day takes us to the Western Conference as the Dallas Stars eliminate the Vegas Golden Knights in seven games to move on for a date with the Colorado Avalanche. The entire West playoff, the entire rest of the playoffs is just must see. Like these four matchups are just good. But that was a good sound, by the way.
Clip it.
Put that in the intro. I am so done with the, oh, Vegas cheated. They circumvented the salary cap. I have wrapped my head around the four stars thing not working. I will not ever be able to wrap my head around not having Mark Stone for half of the season being a good thing. That there is no way that the Vegas Golden Knights didn't have multiple of their best players this regular season. How dare they? Like, no, it's not an advantage for you. It's great that you can throw some players out there in the playoffs, but you have guys getting up to speed at the speediest time of year. You have guys like Hurdle has barely played with any of these dudes, and now you're throwing him out there in a game seven with your season on the line. Not a chance. So I will not believe that not having your best players in the lineup is an edge for you. I don't think that Vegas is super stoked that they squeaked in as the second wild card seed. Now, there isn't, as we mentioned, there isn't an easy matchup in the West in the bunch. But if they were able to get home ice advantage, what they were 6 points away from, which is only three wins. And so from a Toronto standpoint, they basically won. but they were 6 points away from getting home ice advantage in the first round.
Yeah.
If that game is in Vegas, and I get like they literally wouldn't have been playing Dallas, but that's not a matchup. But if Vegas is playing a game seven in Vegas, they just win that hockey game because of how insane that place is. Instead, they had to go into Dallas with the weird Pantera goal song and their kids flying around, and it didn't work. So I am done with Vegas got an unfair advantage. Vegas didn't have their top players. They tried to figure it out the best way they could. They did an awesome job of it, but they still didn't have their legs under them at the time they needed it the most.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the main concern is when you have, because you're right, the playoffs ramp up like that. You can't just get into game one and say, all right, I'll ease my way in, and then game two, I'm into it. No, absolutely not. And you know what? You can talk about the Mark Stone injury all you want, and if it, you know, it's a ruptured spleen, and yes, the timeline is 3 to 12 weeks. I do think there's a problem with how it's all laid out. And I don't have a problem with what Vegas did, though.
Right.
That's the thing.
It's because allowed. Every team could do this.
Yes, and what Vegas is showing to their players, and it's I compare them to the Lakers, because the Lakers can bring in people just because they're in Los Angeles. And people, you know, the Golden Knights can bring in players because they're in Vegas. So you're showing that, hey, we're going to do whatever it takes to win.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes. So that part of the rule, I don't have that much of a problem with. It's just, it's a little weird. Whatever.
Yeah.
Mark Stone, yeah, he scored right off the rip. It's not like he was a guy that was going to absolutely steal that series. Yeah, he scored a couple goals, sure. And he looked okay. But you're right. You bring in Hurdle and you say, all right, this guy's going to, you know, transition seamlessly. No, he was with San Jose for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
That's all he knows.
Right.
And what
he hasn't played with anyone as good as Marsh or so in like 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Like he had Timo Meier for a little bit and then he's gone.
Yeah.
But you know what? Who I will give credit to is Noah Hanifin. Hanifin actually looked pretty solid. They had him on power play one and penalty kill, whatever. So he was a great addition, but at the same time, you set yourself up to go against the Dallas Stars in the first round, and because you didn't have your main guys. And I think that should have been the Western Conference final matchup, whatever. We saw what happened. Yeah, it went seven games. And at the end of the day, you can't talk about it being that much of an advantage when the Vegas Golden Knights are golfing.
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, if it was this great advantage, they stormed through Dallas. And yes, it was hilarious that Stone and Hurdle scored the first two goals.
Yes, absolutely.
But it wasn't even just like the first game, there's that adrenaline pumping and all that stuff. Like, you can get out there, but it's the next day and you're sore and you're trying to get your win back. And it's like, okay, when do we play again? Tomorrow? We got to do that again tomorrow? And so it's that buildup. And I think you saw by the end, they just had no gas. And you look at that goal that Dallas scored, the second one, where that they get that cycle going down in the corner. They know, the fourth line, and they know exactly where everyone is. Cycle. Steele goes to the front of the goal and it's in the net. Vegas doesn't have that. Because, yes, a bunch of these guys have played together a ton, but you haven't in a while, and you're trying to get up to speed against a team that defends really well, and you guys all haven't played with each other in a couple of months, and you're trying to get it all figured out. It doesn't click. And so I think, honestly, the big winner of the weekend was just the regular season in the NHL in general. Yeah. NBA a little bit, too. But the regular season in the NHL, where you can't just, okay, well, we'll sleepwalk our way through, unless it's Boston. Then that worked out really well for them. But everyone will be hurt, and we'll just acquire a bunch of people, and then we'll have a $90 million team out there on the ice for game one, and it'll all just click. But Dallas, it's been clicking all year, and that continuity, I think, really helped them in game one of their series. Just one more quick note from the NHL. Rangers against Hurricanes. I think the Rangers are very good. Super hot take. The President's Trophy winners are a good hockey team.
Yes.
That series is going to be insane.
Yeah.
I think Freddie Anderson is the just huge red flag in the background for Carolina, because that team is so good. But that Panarin goal was devastating for them, and just an absolute backbreaker when they didn't need it. And I think Freddie Anderson is probably going to be, well, he's certainly the reason why I picked the Rangers in this one, but he is, I think, the limiting factor on what Carolina can do.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't say a word about Carolina's defense, and
no.
Their top end talent plus their bottom six is, I have full confidence in, but you're right. Freddie Anderson, who has been great in games, we've seen it down the stretch in the season and in the playoffs, he's had some really good games. He's let in some bad goals as well.
Yeah.
And you're not going to see, you might get one, maybe two iffy goals on Igor Shesterkin. That's it.
Right.
So you're going to have to steal a game with one of those, unless I think Carolina has the advantage when it comes to you look at the defensive six versus defensive six. Absolutely. So I'm not counting Carolina out of this at all. I think this is going to be a great series. And like you mentioned earlier, these are not teams that have crazy amount of grit. Yes, there are some big dudes on Carolina, absolutely. Yeah. And you got Trouba, whatever. I'm not going to get into all the players, but two really skilled teams.
Yeah.
And these are two teams that, while they may be, I don't want to say undersized, but while they may have a little less grit than some of the other teams, these two teams could absolutely win the Stanley Cup, no doubt.
Yeah. You look at where the grit is on some of these teams, like with the Rangers, like, yeah, they have some, but like Kreider can play a gritty game. He's also in their top six. Yeah. Well, yeah. Rempe just goes and beats the hell out of everyone.
Yeah.
He has just absorbed all the grit from the rest of the NHL, like the monsters in Space Jam.
Yeah.
And is just unleashing it into everyone's face. Don't think about that line too hard, but that, like, you think of some of the top players, like Kreider can play with grit, but he can also play with skill. You look at Edmonton, Draisaitl, same thing, Colorado, Rantanen, same thing. Vancouver, there isn't a ton, but JT Miller can be a bit of a prickly player to go up against. The Dallas Stars, freaking everybody.
Half the team, yeah. It's ridiculous.
Like, there is still grit in the National Hockey League. It can just also score 40. Mm-hmm. And that's where this league, I think, has really grown. And that's where I think people who do the Lou Lamoriello style of thing, while that can work for certain teams, and it got the Islanders into the playoffs anyway, but you don't just, well, we'll have a fourth line that can punch your face in. No. That fourth line will get their brains beat in on the ice by the other tough dudes who can also go out there and score 20 goals.
Why do you think Ryan Reeves sat the last few games?
Exactly.
It didn't work. He had a brutal, brutal turnover that changed the course of a game. So, yeah, players like that, it's good to have some grit. And Matt Rempe is one of those guys that is a bit of an outlier, but he's provided some very much needed energy. And we saw that from that first Winter Classic game. He was... Yep. And they're like, well, we can't get this guy out of the lineup. He's brought so much. So, yeah, having those guys is helpful, but you can't just have, three Milan Lucic's on your fourth line. It doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. God, I love talking about the NHL playoffs.
It's such a good year for playoffs.
Oh, it's so good. Every team now could win it.
Absolutely.
Right? And, like, I know literally, but, like, there is not one team that I would be stunned if they were hoisting the Stanley Cup at the end of this thing. And it is going to be such a fun ride. Mm-hmm. There were some good texts. We'll maybe get to those in the second hour. We are right up against it right now because your boy's clock management isn't ideal. But someone texting in, on a side note, PK always speaking facts. You know who else does? You see him on Flames broadcasts. Read them on sportsnet.ca. Eric Francis goes solo every Friday at 5 p.m. for Flames Talk, the Eric Francis Hour. He isn't afraid to ask the tough questions to get information that Flames fans want. He is always speaking the facts. This is a must listen for every Flames fan, and it's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus, please play responsibly. We are going to chat with Luke Fox coming up next to talk about Toronto Maple Leaf locker cleanout day. Some hilarious things were said. We will discuss and figure out what the Leafs need to do and what they can do going into next season. That is next here on Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Toronto long term?
Yeah. I mean, that'd be a goal. I've expressed my love for this place, this city. Obviously, I've grown up here, so... you know, we'll start thinking about that now and, you know, trying to figure something out.
What does it mean to be a Maple Leaf?
It means the world. Obviously, we're looked upon as, you know, kind of gods here, to be honest. And, you know, something that you really appreciate and the love that you get here from this fan base and this attention is, you know, kind of none like any other. So you saw it with the Raps a couple years ago, you know, the love that they still have for a lot of those players that they had to trade off this year. And that's kind of the love you want.
Some interesting comments there from Mitch Marner as the Toronto Maple Leafs clean out their locker room following another disappointing end to the season at the hands of the Boston Bruins in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference quarterfinals. Welcome back to Sportsnet Today, everyone. I'm Peter Klein, and now we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, joined by Luke Fox, who covers the Leafs for Sportsnet and covered everything going on today. Luke, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Obviously, a lot to get to with this team, as there always seems to be with this Toronto Maple Leafs team. But first of all, the lockers have been cleaned out. The media has been spoken to. Did we learn anything aside from the deity status of Toronto Maple Leaf players in the city of Toronto?
Yeah. They're gods, right?
Right.
First round gods. I mean... What are you going to learn? It's kind of Groundhog Day here because the guys we're talking to have been through it so many times. Us on the other side of the camera have been through it so many times. Kind of familiar faces, familiar questions, familiar answers. I think what sticks out, and it has stuck out before, but really this time, is how few of the players took any accountability. Like, you're allowed to say, I need to be better. I didn't play well enough in that playoff series. I have to find a way to make an impact in Game 7. We need to score more than two goals a game. They don't say those things. There's a lot of talk of, oh, well, the penalty kill got a little bit better, and it would have been nice if the power play broke through. You know, we're going to stick together. The adversity will make us stronger. It's been 8 years, guys, with Nylander, Marner, Riley, and Matthews. It hasn't been quite that long, but it's been a long time with Keith and Tavares as well. And there was very little accountability. Sheldon Keefe, to his credit, said that it falls on him. Ilya Samsonov said it falls on him, but he probably won't be back. But as for the core, that's what stood out to me, is the lack of accountability or desire that they needed to look in the mirror a little bit here.
Yeah, and I think I saw Nylander commenting, I don't know if it was after Saturday or today, but talking about, well, you know, like, I was out for a couple and Matthews is out for a couple. It's like, I understand that, yes. We don't do 82 of these things so that everyone is in peak physical condition by the playoffs. Like, it's a grind. It's supposed to be hard to get your name carved onto a trophy at the end of all of it. And one of the things I said here in the first segment, the reason you get four of those dudes is that when one of them is down, you still have three, which seems like a good spot to be in. So I'm with you. I am so surprised at some of the stuff that was coming out of there today, because it's like, this was your opportunity. Like, yeah, I need to be better. Instead, like you said, it's just like, well, maybe.
Yep. And well, those comments from Nylander were today. And he's not wrong. I mean, that is a challenge, right? Auston Matthews is a 69 goal scorer, misses two games, is obviously not right for a third. William Nylander had a serious ocular migraine. It was hard for him to see. He missed the start of the series. But I'm 100% with you. You have enough offensive talent to match the Boston Bruins. One thing that probably isn't being talked about enough here is that Boston isn't this crazy formidable opponent. They had Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha as their top two centermen. You know, that they had young guys, unproven guys in their lineup. It's not like they're going up against the 80s Oilers or the 70s Canadians or something. This is a beatable team. And I think maybe we'll find that out when the Florida Panthers get their shot at them in round two here. But it's just time and again. And you know what? Yes, they were close. They showed some character. I really thought defensively they played excellent, particularly in the last three games, games five and six especially. They played above their heads. Those were two of the best defensive gems that the Leafs have played. But their past 14 games, playoff games, they haven't got more than three goals. And when you consider that this is a team built to score, built to kill you with their power play, their very strength turned into a weakness at the most important time. And I think that's what's frustrating to fans. And I think that's what the guys who get paid to put the puck in the net should own up to a little bit more.
So covering this team, like, are you ever tempted to just like copy and paste an old article and put it in? Like, obviously you're a professional, you would never do it, but like, I'm debating, like, we're just going to save this interview and just roll it back next year if this thing keeps happening.
Yeah. I mean, you try to find new ways to say the same thing. Because really, at part, you know, we're talking about the players right now, but part of it falls under the construction, like management, whether that's Dubas. Trey Living, I think his hands were quite tied coming in late to the situation. But the whole bet here was, if we spend half our cap on supremely talented offensive players, four forwards, and our fifth highest paid guy is a defenseman who's known for his offense, eventually that offense is going to come at you in so many waves and be so overwhelming that we're going to get to teams on mismatches and the offense is going to save the day. And that whole blueprint of how to build a championship team is a very new one. It's forget building from the net out. It's building from the other team's crease back. And it was, you know, it was a gamble, but this is eight seasons in a row. I think we have enough proof now that the formula doesn't work. So I'm fascinated to see how aggressive they are in changing that formula.
And the change is now going to be the biggest part of the conversation here in Toronto. They didn't do a whole lot. Like you said, Brad Treliving wasn't able to join the team until like midway through the first round of the draft. But now that he has this full season, and now he has a full offseason to get ready for it, what can they? A lot of people know or think they know what they should do, and that's one of the big guys gets traded. You bring in a couple of other pieces, and maybe you have gasp depth in the organization. But Marner has the no trade. Tavares has the no trade. Matthews, I would assume, isn't going anywhere. And Nylander just signed a very long, very expensive contract. So what, like, maybe not necessarily what should change, but what can change with this roster going into next year?
Well, the coach can change for sure. As for the roster, they do have a bunch of free agents coming off the books. So they can decide to spend that money on defensemen or goalies. Because I love Joseph Woll. I think he has a high ceiling, but he can't stay healthy. And Samsonov, I'd be shocked if he's back. So they have to spend on a partner for Joseph Woll. They have to spend on the blue line because there's a lot of holes there that just guys coming off the books. But the big thing that they can do, and I'm fascinated to see if they will do, is approach Mitch Marner and say, we realize you're under contract for one more year. We realize you have a no-move clause, but we are not going to give you the raise you're hoping for at the end of that year, which would be something that, what, starts with a 12? Surely he won't take a penny less than Nylander at 11.5. So that's going to be a hefty commitment. Plus, he wants term. So are you just going to keep doing the same thing, give Marner a raise? Or do both sides come to the realization that he's going to have to get that raise from a different franchise? And if so, is it worth starting those conversations now in the off season to try and get something back for him and not have him walk out the door for free like Zach Hyman did?
Yeah, and that one, like, he said in the clip, like, oh yeah, the goal is to stay in Toronto. Like, it's I think another layer to the fascination of this whole thing is the ones that you would maybe move. Like Tavares's contract would be an expiring. But we all know the pajamas picture and all of that. And then you have March Marner, who is also the local kid. So the two that might be the ones you would move are the ones who probably would want to stay and get this thing done in Toronto the most, not commenting on the want or whatever of Nylander or Matthews. But the fact that it's the two local guys who could be in that spotlight, I think just adds a real fascinating layer to all of it.
It absolutely does. And the Tavares one, you know, he reasserted that his desire to be in Maple Leafs, he loves it. You know, he's got a big family now. You know, he's got three kids all living here, and that would be like a whole lifestyle change for him. I really sense that he has no interest in moving on. He's going to have to take a pay cut on his next deal. But in order to get out from under the last year of that one, you're paying a team just because he's past his prime and he's not. You know, I still think there's value to the player, but it's not $11 million worth of value. The Leafs have so few prospects and picks. Do they want to attach a first-rounder to dump Tavares' contract the way they did at the end of Patrick Marleau's contract? I don't think so. My sense is they're just going to have to eat that one. And the fact that I think Marner actually has some value on the trade market, of course, like we mentioned, he has to agree to being moved, but he seems frustrated. He doesn't seem to have the same zest. I know what he said today, but it's not said with the same conviction that he has in the past. I do sense that the scrutiny of this market, of the fan base, of having to do interviews, I do sense that it's starting to wear on him a little bit. So would he be open to that? I think that's the probably the biggest question heading into their offseason.
We've talked about changes. You mentioned Keefe. I don't have the odds in front of me. I would imagine, will Sheldon Keefe be fired? Yes, is at minus a billion right now. But beyond him, probably not Tre Living. What about above Tre Living? Is there a hot seat that Brendan Shanahan is sitting on right now?
It should be, yeah. I mean, he's had that job for a long time now. It's my understanding. I think he still has maybe one more year left on his deal. But what has shifted here is that he reports to someone new. You know, Keith Pelley took over as CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. And now he's relatively new on the job. And no one really knows what he's thinking here. Is he thinking we need to clean house and that starts right from the top, right from Shanahan? Do they need a new culture? Do they need a new voice and let it trickle all the way down? Or is he going to say, hey, I'm just new on the job. I want to take a year to get to know behind the scenes how things are working before making any dramatic decisions such as that. But it is fascinating. My point of view is that results speak for themselves. And the fact that this team has won one playoff round since Shanahan took over, has burned through at least one big-name coach, you know, I think – in retrospect, sticking with this core, sticking with Kyle Dubas for as long as he did, I think it's all kind of backfired. There's some admiration in sticking to the plan and giving people a second chance, but I think we've reached the point where it's been too much, and I think Shanahan needs to be held accountable for that.
It was just such a catchy name, the Shanna Plan. How could you go away from it,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like. One of the things, though, to just speak positively about this for a second, one of the things that we did like, Shannon and I talked about this in the first segment, it does feel like while the cupboards aren't overstocked by any stretch of the imagination, it does seem like they got a good one in Nyes. And Robertson was always in the right spot. It just couldn't always pull the trigger. But what about a couple of the kids in their first performances in the Stanley Cup playoffs with this team?
Yeah, for sure. Matthew Nyes was a stud. I thought he was awesome in the playoffs. He raised his level, and he really had a bit of an uneven regular season. You know, he's a college kid going from playing 40 games to suddenly playing, you know, upward more than 85 games when you factor in the playoffs, how much action he saw. And he was not shook by the moment at all. I love this kid's attitude. He's built to play in a market like Toronto where there's so much scrutiny because he just goes out and plays. He's confident in himself. He doesn't get too caught up in any of the noise or nonsense. And he looked to me like a guy that figured out that he's actually a big man. And the moment that really stood out was when David Pastrnak was trying to goat Morgan Rielly into some stuff after the whistle. And he intercepted and pushed Pasta and said, "No, go me. Go me if you want to fight somebody." And this kid's 21 years old. Pasta's like, you know, a multi-all-star in the league, one of the best players in the sport. And he's right in his grill. And I absolutely love that. Plus, he came up with the clutch overtime winner. You know, there's other bright spots, too. You know, I really think Simone Benoit was a nice find by Brad Treliving. And that was his first time playing in the playoffs. I think, you know, his physicality brought a nice new texture to the Leafs. I thought he was a good find. They got Easton Cowan coming, who was just named MVP of the Ontario Hockey League last week. So there are some young guys coming, some bright spots. It's just, is that going to mesh in time while the core is still in its prime, and can they push through finally?
So when looking at this offseason, there is no doubt change of some sort would absolutely be required for this team to get beyond this hurdle that has come up one more time. When we get down to some of the specifics, what type of a player, is it a type of player or is it a position that this team needs to go out and try to address this offseason? What would be on the checklist for you?
Yeah, for sure. The two that come immediately to mind is a goaltender. Like we mentioned, I think Wohl is okay. It's just you can't trust that he's going to stay healthy. He hasn't completed a full season in the pros without getting injured at least once. I really appreciate his mindset and his goaltending from a technical standpoint. I really think they do have something there, but you can't trust that he's going to, you know, be the guy. I think you need a suitable partner. I wonder if they look at a guy like UC Soros in Nashville, who's I believe only has one more year left on his deal, and they got Askarov coming. So I wonder if they make a pitch for a goaltender that is more of a that you have more confidence in. And the other big one to me is you need a bona fide top four right shot. And I know there's probably 31 other teams that would like one of those too. But it's been a hole on this team for a long time. They have a lot of guys that can be second pair, third pair guys, but they don't have that horse on the right side. And so when we bring up names like Marner or bring up the idea of making any trades, I think that's probably something you're looking for in return.
We were kind of talking about it here, first segment. I've referenced it three times. Maybe just go back and take a listen. The Flames and Leafs this year just seemed like such natural trade partners. And obviously, there's a bit of history there on both sides. But the Flames were trading every defenseman. But I think specifically Tanev would have been perfect for there. And, you know, Jacob Markstrom's name got floated out a time or two for some different destinations. It seemed like there was just that perfect symmetry between those two sides. Obviously, it doesn't get done. And there's a lot that can go into those sorts of things. But do you think Toronto did enough at the deadline to try to get this team over the finish line here?
Well, it was half-hearted, right? They spent low number of picks. They went bargain shopping. They brought in Labushkin and Joel Edmondson, and they brought guys on the fringes. They didn't really go for it. And part of that was because Treliving didn't want to part with his big chips, whether it was Cowan, whether it was his first rounder, you know, to really dip their toes in those waters and go for it. He would have had to spend one of their few, you know, grade A assets. He chose not to. And did he do that because maybe he didn't think the team was one piece away? That might be it. Absolutely, I thought Chris Tanev would have been the ideal fit. And they still might pursue him in free agency.
Yeah.
There's other names that, if they hit the market, I think the Leafs will take a look at. Brett Pesce in Carolina, he would kind of fit the mold of what they're looking for. I wonder about Brandon Montour in Florida. If he doesn't re-sign, if they, you know, they only have so much money to spend. And I think Sam Reinhart is probably their number one priority. Is there enough money for them to keep Montour? If not, does Toronto take a look? So there will be a few options out there. But yeah, I was with you heading into the season. I would have thrown Lindholm's name in there too. I thought Toronto needs a middle six center that's defensively responsible. And there was a lot of reasons why to think the Flames and Leafs could have been trade partners. Didn't work out. You have to wonder how much Flames ownership was loath to trade with Trey Living. I think that's a question that kind of still lingers a little bit.
Yeah, I think there might be a little something there that didn't seem like, but both sides really ended on the best of terms. Last one for you. It's weird in that whole thing. Steven Stamkos' name never came up. I'm old enough to remember the last time he was a free agent, and it was, he's going to be a Leaf. He's from Toronto. How could, oh, he signed in Tampa Bay. Okay, well, now he is again. I'm not saying it's a fit. I don't think either side should do it. It's not going to stop the rumors from happening. Do you anticipate there being any type of Stamkos to Toronto buzz?
Yeah, I mean, maybe from fans, but I don't see that happening. Yeah. But based on, it's not what they need, for one. I mean, at this stage, he's a power play guy. They have enough power play weapons. I just don't see a fit there. The comments coming out of Tampa at the end made me feel like they're going to take a serious run at just keeping him there. I think my understanding is that is his preferred choice, as long as they don't insult him with an extremely low ball offer. But if he does hit the open market, I don't think it's Toronto. I think maybe you look at a place like Nashville. He has a lot of friends. McDonough and Luke Shen in particular come to mind. Nashville's tax plays in a tax-free state. I think I might be looking there before I look to Toronto if he doesn't stay in Tampa.
I would just love the sales pitch. No, guys, I know we have four high-level offensive players. We just need a fifth. That's all we were. Yeah. That's what separated us from Boston. Luke, this was a blast, man. Thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate the time, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, take care.
Yeah, you as well. That is Luke Fox from Sportsnet.ca joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. It has been a tough time for Toronto sports fans. We'll get into it a little bit more in a couple of moments. When we come back, it is hour number two of Sportsnet Today. We are cruising through this show. We have the incredibly talented Haley McGoldrick coming up next. There was a big basketball game that happened a little bit north of us. We will chat about that and a whole lot more from the sports world. We will get into a big win for Canada at the U18s. We'll get into the Toronto Blue Jays and a little bit more from the hockey world. But first, I mentioned before, bit of a tough time for Toronto sports fans. It's not just the hockey. It is also the baseball. It is time for the Blue Jays Report.
Time now for the Jays Report on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Shan Burgee.
Yeah, it's not really getting much better for the Toronto Blue Jays. Let's look back at a three-game set against the Washington Nationals. Friday night's game had tons of bounce-back potential with Patrick Corbin on the mound for the Nats. He's had a rough start to the season, had a rough start to game one as well. In the second inning, Dalton Varsho hit a two-run double, and George Springer hit a sacrifice fly to give the Jays an early 3-0 lead. Yusei Kikuchi pitched six innings with one run allowed and seven strikeouts, but Eric Swanson came into the game and he blew it. Not a single out recorded for Swanson, and a Luis Garcia three-run shot ended the night. To be fair to Swanson, it didn't matter as the Jays didn't score after the second inning and dropped Game 1 9-3. Game 2 was better for the Jays. It helped that the Nationals started the game with a comedy of errors, missing tags, throwing balls out of play, and letting the Jays take free bases. After the first, it was 4-0 Toronto. In the bottom of the seventh, C.J. Abrams and Nick Senzel picked up an RBI each, and it was 4-2. But this first home run of the year came at the perfect time.
Kevin Kiermaier steps to the plate. Law delivers to him. Kiermaier sends it deep into the gap, and it's actually going to hit the top of the wall. It's going to be a home run for Kevin Kiermaier. as he gave that thing a ride.
The Jays would hold off the Nats to win 6-3 in Game 2. It was a much-needed gem from Kevin Gausman, who got through over five innings with just three hits, eight strikeouts, and no earned runs. Truthfully, Game 3 was a disaster. Alek Manoah got the call-up from AAA, and it wasn't great. He loaded the bases in the first inning, but got out of the jam with just one run of damage. The Jays would score on an error and would load the bases for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
The 2-1 pitch. And Guerrero gets underneath one, launches this thing to left field, and it is gone. 20 rows deep on a grand slam for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa would add another run to make it 6-1 for the Jays in the third. And here's where it blew up. Luis Garcia hit a solo bomb in the third and then came right back in the fourth to bring two more home with a single. And in the fourth with two men on, Jesse Winker to the plate.
As he stands in and stares down Manoah, the 3-2 pitch. And he sends this one towards the wall, and it's gone. In right field, a three-run shot has given Washington the lead.
The Nats took the lead there, and then the game was back and forth until the end. Toronto would go up 8-7, but then the defense fell apart, and the Nationals would finish with an 11-8 win in the final game of the series. Alek Manoah finished with six earned runs, six strikeouts, and four walks with a 13.5 ERA. It's an off day for the Jays, and they'll be back at it tomorrow with a series in Philly with the Phillies. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Shan Vergie, and that was your Jays report.
Catch the Blue Jays all season long, right here on Calgary's home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.